Our guest is on a mission to reimagine e-commerce for beauty lovers by providing a trusted marketplace for buying and rehoming new beauty products. You will love hearing her startup stories and founder journey stories. So stay tuned for the Startup Life live show. Let's glow, everyone. Hello and welcome to the Startup Life live show. I'm your host, Andy Lyons, four times founder and startup champion to founders around the world. And after raising one, two, three, four businesses of my own, that's right, I've got a really good idea of what you're going through every single day, the levels of high certainty that you're navigating. Oh my gosh, hair pulling moments and champagne popping moments, all happening within hours in the same day. I am in awe and wonder of you for getting up every day and making your vision and mission happen and executing and implementing, even though you don't even know what you don't know, right? That's the beauty of the startup and founder journey. And that's why I am deeply grateful that you carved out time to tune in to the Startup Life live show, because as you do better, your startup will do better. And you're going to learn so many great insights and ideas here that will help you on your founder journey, because we are so about maximizing the joy and minimizing the heartache from your startup and founder journey. If you are watching right now live, hi, please like the video from whatever platform. We're live on LinkedIn and Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. And if you are on YouTube and you have not done so already, I would be so grateful if you click that subscribe button right there and notification bell. That would help me reach more founders. And if you want to get a deep dive on each of our guests every time I post a new show, you know, I'm live here on Tuesdays and Fridays at 12 p.m. ET. Hop on over to the Startup Life Live Meetup group. And that way you'll receive an alert, and you'll also get the deep dive on our guest and what they're building and creating and bringing to the world. I have a little bit, I mean, you can see behind me here, it's Valentine's Day today. So I have a special little Andylicious advice moment here. And that is, I want to do a shout out, everyone, to, I don't know, not just a shout out. I want to send out a big honkin' Andy hug and filled with gratitude and appreciation to all the startup and founder mentors out there. Look, you guys, I mean, you're clappers, right? Also, you are the gift that keeps on giving. And founders, you know this to be true. The ripple effect from a founder's time and their thoughtful feedback and their listening ear provides you with incredible insights and advice for your journey, but also the ripple effect. Your mentors, you're going to be making a difference for years to come in ways that you have no idea, nor can you track. And let me share why having mentors who believe in you is what's so important. And this is it. Coach me and I will learn. Challenge me and I will grow. Believe in me? Oh yeah, I will win. And having that belief in a founder, they will tell you again and again, I'm here because you believed in me. So thank you, mentors, for taking the time out of your life, day, whatever it is you're working on, to believe in founders and helping them win. Yay! Another clapper around for you mentors. All right. I'm so excited to introduce you to our guest. Let me just bring this piece of artwork up. That's right. It's the one and only Karen Lee. She's the founder of Glow Beauty. You know how much I love that word, glow. It's a first-time consumer-to-consumer re-commerce marketplace for beauty. Glow enables consumers to easily buy and sell makeup, skincare, and beauty products. And Karen, oh my gosh, she's an actor, sailor, polyglot, robot fixer, and beauty product encyclopedia. And she has 8+ years in fashion and luxury, and in just 5 years earned her HBA and MSc. Oh my gosh, let's bring her into the room, bring this down, and celebrate this fab female founder on Valentine's Day. Hey, Karen Lee!
Hello! thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here, especially on Valentine's Day to share the love. Where are you hailing today from?
Today, I'm at my parents' house in Mississauga, Ontario. Tomorrow, I'll be in New York. And yeah, that's kind of where I spend most of my startup time. It's like in New York and Boston. So
absolutely. And folks, you know how it is in the founder journey. Sometimes you're couch surfing. Sometimes you're guest room surfing. Sometimes you're at a co-working space to make it happen, especially in those early days when you're really trying to keep it lean and mean and skinny for keep the overhead low and doing what it takes to make your business work. I love that. Now, I do have a quick question. Polyglot? Like, how many languages do you speak, Karen?
I have gotten a haircut in 4 different languages. So that I think is like my bar. You know, I'm not possibly what people might consider like fluent, but I can communicate. And that's just like a result of having grown up in a multicultural household, being Canada, we have to take French. And I just became like a sponge for languages, just something. So then in grad school, one of the requirements for graduation was that you have to be able to speak at least 3 languages. So
I love that. Awesome. And so, you know, folks, don't you love that term? I can get a haircut in 4 languages. They'd be like, I can call an Uber in 4 languages. I can order my dinner in 4 languages. That is what's important. Not to mention saying hello to everybody. So let's talk about what called you to launch Globe Beauty and become an entrepreneur. Did you have role models in your life as an entrepreneur? Were you that person who was hustling product in 3rd grade? Share your entrepreneurship launch story.
Yeah. No, I was the one who was like hustling my little sister. I didn't understand money, but you know, let's put that behind us. But I've always had a mind for like, how can I maximize my dollar everywhere? And I've always loved fashion. So I would grow up like watching all the runway shows, like every fashion season. I know all the designers. And that's kind of like what led me to work in retail. Cause I remember like, I literally knocked on the door of a designer who's based in Toronto. I was like, hi, like, how can I work here? And I was like literally in high school and they're like, yeah, you know what? You would have to start on the floor and get some retail experience. Then I learned you can't get retail experience without retail experience. So I ended up getting a job at Anthropology because they were like, great, you have no experience. We can start from scratch because they have a different level of like how they want to teach customer service. So I was like, great. And it was like from working in retail, I realized like how much waste there is at every part [S2] Wow. [S1] Of the supply chain. And of course, like just seeing the weather change as I was growing up, like it's given me a lot of climate anxiety. So I knew that change is really hard to do because these are like huge, a lot of the fashion, like huge publicly traded companies. It's not much that they have incentive to do because of the huge margins to do much about it. And because I did my my final thesis project in Milan in the beauty industry with LVMH, I was like, beauty, this is interesting. And then I started getting really curious about beauty products. And once I got back to the States, signed up for like every beauty subscription box there was, accumulated, no joke, like over 700 products because you get like 5 a month for each service for like $15, $20. So it adds up really quickly over the course of a year. And I was like, I can't get rid of this. Like you can't just like donate it. There are no marketplaces other than like eBay really allowed beauty products to be sold. So I was like, okay, there's something to this. And then I also like grew up in competitive robotics, like in middle school and high school. And
so that enter the AI part of the equation.
Yeah, it all kind of makes sense,
right?
If you kind of like look back. So I was like obsessed with my robotics team, and we had to raise all our own money in order to build a better robot and whatnot. So that was kind of like where I really learned a lot of like the management skills, like
stable. Oh, and team building and how to get a big project together with a whole bunch of different people.
And fundraising.
I
really just show up to like these local companies and be like, hi, my name is Karen. I want to build robots. Can I have $15,000?
There you go. Hi, my name is Karen. I'm in high school. I need 15K to do these robots. And you hustled and you made it happen?
Yeah. Our team raised something between like $30,000 and $60,000 a year.
Oh my gosh. How many of you?
The fundraising crew is probably never more than like four of us. Wow. But like, I kind of like,
oh yeah,
I had a drip campaign through the mail. Like I would literally send like a wrench in the mail, like go to Home Depot, buy like a little wrench, send in the mail, like to the CEO or whatnot, and be like, hi, something good is coming soon. And then after that, like send them a sponsorship package.
Oh my gosh, that creative brain, how to get the money in, what's going to, that's advertising 101. I mean, or, you know, for getting advertisers in on a magazine or show or whatever. But can we bring up the reason you and I know each other? The one and only Allison Byers. Woo, everybody. Allison says, Karen embodies the entrepreneurial spirit and tackles every obstacle head on while reaching out to others. She's also hilarious. Everyone should have the pleasure of working with her. Oh my gosh. Well, Allison, you know, since you swung by, you know, we have to bring this up right here. Folks, this is Allison's wonderful business, Scroobius, a human first fundraising experience. And if you are raising money, you want to hop on over to Scroobius and check it out, get on their services, use Andy15 to get a discount. But most importantly, get over there and start enjoying other and connecting with other founders who are making a difference. Don't you agree that Scroobius helps prepare you for any pitch situation?
Scroobius is and Allison is the reason my pitch deck went from one of the worst, most mediocre things I've ever produced in my life to something that actually made sense and actually won like a best pitch deck award.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, thank you, Allison, for being you. Yeah. And listeners and viewers, you have to hop on over and check Allison Byers and Scroobius out. She's a phenomenal female founder. And speaking of female founders, if you want a mentor and coach who works specifically with female founders, please go check out Rebecca Moore and In a Nutshell Consulting. She's saying here, love both of your energy and massive action. She has a phenomenal monthly test kitchen for female founders. She really devotes every minute of every day to making sure female founders get what they need to succeed. So yay. Okay. So you had this lived experience, not only in high school, but you combined that love of competitive robotics with a love of retail and beauty. And then it turned out to be even beauty products specifically, but also a deep passion and commitment to help the climate crisis, because you saw all the waste and you know anything that's going into waste is going to increase the heat on this planet and make it uninhabitable. Yeah. And so you start saying and putting that brilliant brain of yours to work. How can I make a difference in this way? So when did the seed or spark of, you know, uplifting and thrifting and, you know, for the beauty industry, how did that spark Glow Beauty? And why did you become passionate about you being the uniquely qualified fab female founder to lead this initiative, which was creating a marketplace so people could move product?
Yeah. First, I noticed that there was all kinds of re-commerce. That's e-commerce with an R in front of it. So it's re-commerce. It's kind of like
resale. I love re-commerce.
It's like a little niche industry term right now. And I realized there was basically a marketplace for everything except for beauty. And I was convinced it's because like Silicon Valley tech bros who get all the VC funding just have never encountered a beauty product hoarding problem. So I was like, I need to make this platform because I know exactly what it should look and feel like. I want it to be something that I would personally love using. And as it stands right now, I hate marketplaces and shopping on them as a consumer. And I think like always like the perfect person to build something as someone who doesn't like the status quo.
That's right.
And yeah, like if you think about it, peer-to-peer marketplaces in general, like the process has not really changed since eBay put up their landing page. It's still
and Spotify doesn't make it any better because they make it so that you just can pop everything in the way they want you to do e-commerce, right?
Yeah. So we have like a double-sided marketplace. So Shopify would have loved to be able to have a plug-and-play solution like that, but the needs and nuances of beauty resale are so specific that we ended up doing something fully custom.
Wow. Now, to do something fully custom, Goddess Karen of the Beauty Glow, that's not an endeavor that is, oh, let me just create an app over here or create a little. You had to go into custom. Did you outsource this? Do you bring a lot of the tech capability to the plate? How did that happen?
So we actually started as a subscription box swapping platform because I thought the problem I was ending up with all the stuff I didn't want was because their algorithms wasn't matching me to the right products. And so I kind of like designed the algorithm to match people kind of like, you know, I want what you have what she wants, she has what I want. And
like a swap meet.
Exactly. But like all online. So right. That
is it me or did our Karen Lee freeze everybody? Ruth, do you? Oh, one minute, you're back. Here she is. Say that one more time.
Okay, so my very first prototype, it was like just the most generic white label marketplace. Uh-huh. It was not differentiated, could probably not compete very well with like eBay. And then from that, I learned a lot about just tossing up any kind of undifferentiated website. So then I knew exactly like what I wanted to make. And I had like no more savings left because I spent it all on this prototype and hiring the wrong developers. I call this my startup tuition for my PhD in founder life.
And well, can we just take a moment, Karen, to highlight that founders, this happens all the time. Trying to find the right dev team to create your tech product is really difficult. And a local here in Boston, Igor Belogoretsky, has a wonderful how-to manual. If you ever need it, just it's on like episode 2 of the Startup Life Live Show, but I'd be happy to shoot it out to you to help prevent that or help you at least, you know, get through the tough times. You got to the other side. I hope you didn't beat yourself up too much because this is a common problem. In fact, Karen, one of our founders that we interviewed on the show found out after everything on the front end was built, that the developer she used couldn't build the back end. And he just wasn't mature enough to say that. He just ghosted and took all the code with him and they had to start over.
I've heard of that happening and it's not like rare, which is so maddening that like, especially women founders, because traditionally like they haven't been in those like CS classes and whatnot. They just feel like they have to rely on someone else.
Yeah. I'm glad you got through that and hopefully, you know, forgave yourself for anything that you were feeling badly about, you know, those negative voices. We don't want them tearing away at you. How did you solve the problem then after that?
So I knew what I wanted to build, but I'm not like a design expert, but I did teach myself how to use Figma using their free YouTube videos. So I downloaded the platform, learned how to do it to the point where then I could evaluate who has the UX skills to actually design something for me.
Nice. In Figma.
So then I got a couple interns. They were women who were kind of looking for career pivots. They were like, she was an English teacher who lived in Japan for X number of years and now she wanted to become a UX designer. So I brought on a team of 3 and we just like built, like went through the designs like piece by piece. And I don't have that like design background. They all came from like boot camps, but I knew when it would look right. And I knew whether or not things were being built correctly. And Figma, for me, it's kind of like a combination of both like code and like Photoshop.
Okay.
Both of which I understand. So it was kind of like, okay, now I know how to break everything down to components and make it modular so that that design to code element would be more seamless. So then I took the Figma prototypes to specialist Bubble developers, and they were an agency that was just getting started. So I got really great pricing from them and like spent the rest of like my savings from, and like literally every last penny I had putting this together to prove that like, if we have this amazing front end experience that lowers all the barriers to listing creation for beauty products, because the one thing about beauty sellers that's unique from any other category is that on average, they're selling 100 products at a time, like 100 unique SKUs, which is an insane process. For anyone who's ever like listed something on Poshmark or Mercari or eBay, you know how long it takes to just list one product, let alone 100 of them. So, you know, fast forward to the prototype is done, not the prototype, the beta has been built and everything. And we went to market and people were listing products like crazy. Like I expected.
Oh my gosh. Let's get the clappers out for that one. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that story. And so now you're testing. I mean, this is beta test. You get it up there, and the next thing you know, you're getting some really great feedback. What were folks saying, and what was the typical customer? Because, you know, we always talk about how we need to have a real understanding of our customer, and you've got a lot of ingredients for your customer profile, persona. Folks, I'm just going to pop this up so we can talk a little bit about, you know, how you fill this in. You have to understand in a customer persona exercise what's motivating them, the goals, their behaviors, their expectations, and who they be in the world. So I'm thinking the most important thing is that these are folks who want to share or buy without increasing consumption in the world.
You know what? That is my goal and my motivation for why people might want to shop secondhand, or like not always secondhand. It's like pre-owned and underloved is how I put it, because so many of these products are like brand new. And that just speaks to the hyper consumption in America and in the beauty industry in general. Like there's fast fashion. Everyone's talking about that. We know it's bad, but then there's also fast beauty, and that's talked about less. And the thing about beauty products is that almost all of them are manufactured using like virgin plastics that are not recyclable, because they are
like Elf Cosmetics, which is just so easy to grab, or you're over at Target and you're grabbing.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like the brands that are at Sephora or Ulta, like all this packaging, it's all going to end up in landfill. And like when 87% of products never fulfill their useful life, that means they just get abandoned for whatever reason. It's a problem that really adds up.
It kind of reminds me, folks, do you know that meme about the chapstick that was used all the way to the end? It's, you know, it got the chapstick award. It's the same thing with lipstick or eye makeup. Or, I mean, I swear I'm using blush that's probably, you know, 4 years old, for crying out loud. And I use it every day. So I mean, I'm not going out without it on. So, you know, these products, you might get tired, or someone sells you on a new or upsells you on something new. What were you finding out about your customers as they jumped onto your site and said, yes, I'm moving product, and yes, I want that. I've been wanting to try that. Let me get that here. What were you learning about them?
We have like some very distinct buyer and seller persona. So on the seller side, we have what I call like the middle class hustler moms, whose passion is beauty. And that's like her escape, whether or not it's on Instagram, YouTube, or TikTok. And she's always hearing about the latest and greatest and like wants to buy everything. And that's where, you know, she plays with her products. But sometimes an unexpected bill comes up and she needs to make a couple hundred dollars to, you know, tie things over. And the most liquid asset that I at the time were like those limited edition eyeshadow palettes that she bought and like never really got around to using, or like, you know, had swatched on her arm once when she got it and then never looked at it again. And then on the buyer side, you have, again, like kind of the same persona, but also with the addition of like the Gen Z and younger millennial crowd, who are, you know, they can't always afford to buy things new and are more eco-conscious and like want to try the things that everyone's talking about online, but can't always necessarily afford it. And they're very comfortable transacting in the peer-to-peer space and don't mind buying pre-owned. But in general, like both our buyer and seller are very like value driven in terms of money.
Sure. And let's talk about pre-owned. Mm-hmm. How do you discern if something is safe enough? And was that an AI feature of your platform? How does that work?
Yeah. So the rule is anything that a makeup artist would be able to safely use between clients is okay to sell used, because makeup artists, they don't buy a new kit every single time they like do a new bridal party. So, you know, for lipstick, you can like razor off the top layer and then it's still good. And then as long as products like haven't changed like chemically, so like, you know, your 4-year-old blush is actually probably still quite safe to use, even though I'm sure it says like you should use it within like 24 months. It's fine. There's enough preservatives in there and there's not like a lot of, as long as there's not a lot of moisture, like it does keep. If it smells weird or the color's changing, that's when you need to really worry. And these are all things that I learned from makeup artists who are working in the industry, just because I did do a lot of side hustling as an actor in the Toronto film and TV industry. So I worked with a lot of makeup artists and I would sit in their chair and we would just chat about like what I was building, if they were into it and their thoughts and like.
Okay, wait a minute. Can we go back? Can we rewind for like a 2 sentences ago? You were in the makeup artist chair. Why?
I was an actor. And I still technically am. Like I have like an audition to do later today. So.
And what kind of acting? In commercials and what?
TV shows. I've done a couple movies. So I started as a background actor because when I was doing like the customer interview stage, like I didn't come from like a full-time job. Like I really went from school to looking for a job to realizing I don't want to work for someone else because there's this huge market opportunity I cannot ignore. So I was like, well, I gotta like be able to make some money. So I might as well sit on set for 16 hours, getting paid minimum wage, and like work through a hotspot on my phone.
This is an outstanding side hustle, folks. Yeah. And people all need character. I mean, movies need character actors. This is key. And you get dolled up for it. So you're sitting there getting dolled up and you're able to do some more customer discovery and product discovery gathering.
Yeah. I've actually discovered some great like brands just by like talking with a makeup artist.
Oh my gosh. I love this. Something fierce. Hey, Ruth Machaba. She's the Startup Life Live Show community manager out of Nairobi, Kenya. And she says, I love, Karen, how you have identified your clients and have made products for your audience and to their preference through swapping. So, you know, you're bringing the name brands, you're putting them on the website and folks are going, oh yeah, I've been meaning to try that. I agree, Ruth. I love that. And also there's the intangible, which is you're meeting that need for many folks to stop consuming in the traditional way. You know, oh, I'd like that over there. You want this over here? Oh, yes, I'd like that. You know, that wonderful sort of swap meet feel, which I love. I love for clothes. I love for everything. And so now you're ready to, you know, put it out into the world and actually charge. I mean, you're getting people to move product on your website, but how are you making money as the founder? Like, where are you getting your piece of the action in the exchanges?
So we take a percentage of sales.
Okay.
And so, like, our platform fee is like a lot lower than a lot of our competitors. We've made it as low as possible because.
What is your platform fee?
It's 10%.
Okay. And so, and that is for the sellers. Who pay that?
Yeah.
Or everybody.
Super transparent about pricing. Like there's never any hidden fees. You know exactly what it's going to be like, for whether or not you're the buyer or seller.
How do other platforms do it?
Some of them have like extra like surcharges at the checkout process. And they change the fee depending on like if your item's like under $20 or like $10, they take higher percentages. So you end up making like $1.50. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not going to cut it when we're selling like a lot of small products. And yeah, like it just doesn't make sense. I want to be able to accommodate like this specific category. And that's one of the things.
I want to open up your website and share it with everybody. What do you think?
Sure.
Can I do that? Should I click on the shop now or sign up to sell? Well, we'll just go through the process. Everybody, I'm going to bring it up because I want you to take a look at how Karen implemented her idea. You know, and having to, you know, we're going to start with this here, which is the, and I, you know, just let me know if it's going to go through. Did it go through properly? Hold on, everyone.
Click shop low marketplace. So okay. This is kind of like a page where we gather everyone and tell people what we do.
Right. And so I'm not, okay. So hold on, everybody. Let me just stop sharing and grab that because I think with StreamYard, you have to actually grab the place, but I really want to, we're going to go to the shop glow market. Here we go. And hang in there. I'm going to share this because it's one thing for Karen to talk about what she created that's so different from others. But here you land here.
Yeah.
And you have the ability to shop now or sign up to sell.
Yep.
Which I love.
Like all things you can buy right now. So that Tatcha Dewy Skin Cream is like one of the best selling skincare items at Sephora. And we have it for only $50.
Wow.
Because some people buy so many backups. And then you discover something you like more. And you're like, what do I do with these five? Wow. Right? So.
And here are all the top brands. And then they can shop hidden gems. They can just scroll over. Eyes, yeah. Lips, tools, brushes, value sets. Shop your favorite influencers. Oh, that's terrific. So you these are all folks who people are just following like glue. And oh my gosh, and efficient selling, why authentic? This is wonderful. Okay, I just wanted to share that because I think it's so important to see how you have made this site different and how you are really putting out the products that people want. And will your sellers show up? I guess I'm trying to understand, like, are there times when sellers will show up and their products that you're like, no, that doesn't work here?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And we still manually approve everything just because we're still training the AI models to do everything. And like, we're never going to allow something that's like very used to be sold. So there are a bunch of like rules. But what's great is that people who are already transacting in this space are very savvy about what can and can't be sold. But as we grow and scale and we kind of go beyond people who are already in this niche, then that's when we'll need to lean more into the, you know, content marketing and like education part of things.
Oh my gosh. See, that's going to be great because you're going to uplift and make it even more attractive for anybody who's moving product as well as purchasing. I love that. And so how do you get to break even? How many users do you have to have where you're like, okay, we can be profitable and sustainable? What are you targeting?
It really depends on how big we want to grow. Cause again, everything is like not exactly linear. So depending on like how many employees we need to support. And yeah. And it's also like hard to determine exactly how big this can be. I know that the beauty industry is absolutely massive in the US alone. So we have like, if everything takes off in the US, we might not even have to expand internationally. Although there's a lot of demand from people in other countries who have found me and they're like, hi, can we do this? And I'm like, sorry, just not built for it. Yes.
Not yet. Not yet. Because, you know, places like, for example, Johannesburg, they're very thrifty and very upcycling. You know, they just, nobody's buying original plastic there practically. And so I just love the opportunity down the road for you. And so I also love in reading your background and hearing everything you've done, the accelerator programs that you've gotten involved with. Can you talk about a little bit about getting picked up by AWS Amazon Web Services accelerator program and talk a little bit about that and how it served your founder journey?
Yeah, the AWS Impact Accelerator for Women Founders was like a truly like a game changing experience. I've always been very careful about accelerators just because you really have to think about like if it's going to be worth it for you in the end. And if this is, you know, going to be a worthwhile partnership that goes beyond just the life of, you know, those like 3-4 months that the accelerator is going on for. And it opened a lot of doors for us. And it was like kind of insane how quickly the whole process happened from application to, you know, finding out we got in. The program was announced early August, and that's when the applications were open. So I applied like right away within the first like week of the applications being out, and, you know, didn't really think much of it because I'd never gotten into any like super competitive accelerator before. And this is finally when I was like, okay, like the power of Amazon, that they got a lot of resources. Maybe they can help me out. And they're kind of like experts in everything to do with like online shopping and logistics, which great connections to have. So one day, like about a week and a half after I submitted my application, my phone rings. It's an unknown number. And I'm just like, I'm confused, but okay. I pick it up and it's someone who's screening my application. They're like, hi, just want to verify some information. I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad I picked up this call that I would have just thought was spam or something. So went through that whole screening process. And then like not even a week later, they're like, hi, like, can we schedule a video call? And I was like, oh my God. Okay. Okay. No problem. So then got that together. And then they're like, okay, we'll be making decisions the next week or so. So I basically found out within 3 weeks from like
start to finish,
just three to, it was definitely under 4 weeks. It was under a month. And then, you know, I knew they were making decisions on Monday, and the Friday they were like, I got another unknown call, and it's a managing director, Denise. And she's like, hi, is this Karen? I was like, yep, hi. I was so nervous. And she's like, yeah, okay, cool. She just asked me some questions. And then later that night, it was like Friday evening, she's like, hi, can we get on a Zoom call? Like, you know, either tomorrow or the next day. And I was like, oh my God, they were making decisions on Monday. Like, we must really be on the edge of like getting in or not. So, and I also like my tech lead at the time, she was about to fly to Portugal on Sunday. I was going to spend that whole weekend driving from Toronto to Boston because for Boston Startup Week, that was coming up and all that. So made that whole drive to Boston in one go. And then right before my tech lead like got on an airplane to Portugal, we were on Zoom with the managing director, and she's asking us some of the hardest questions I've ever had to answer.
Like what?
She's like, so this is going to take like a lot of marketing. Like it's going to be, you know, you're going to need to, your customer acquisition, it's going to be like a tough road. I was like, yeah. But like, I think that the market's like, it's so big that like, we can't not go after it. She's like, all right. And even though she wasn't the ideal customer, she asked like all the right questions. Wow. And she's like, and I was like, oh my God, like she's not into this. And I was like, this is it. I was like, well, this is a great experience. It was exciting.
Okay, next off the list.
And then she's like, well, can't wait to meet you two in 2 weeks in Seattle. And I was like, wait, what? So she totally faked us out. And like that accelerator came with a grant as well, which was so needed because the day after my very first full-time employee was starting and I had like no money left in the bank.
Yeah, you had fumes left.
Oh. So it was like, and bringing on a full-time employee was already like super scary for me because I was like, oh my gosh, like someone's paycheck is going to depend on what we're able to do. And yeah, it was like the craziest 4 weeks of my life.
Oh my gosh. And how long was the accelerator? Did you have to stay in Seattle the whole time or?
The first week was in Seattle, which is so good. And like we showed up at Amazon HQ and everyone who's part of the accelerator program knew all the founders by name. They were like, hi, Karen. So glad to have you here. Sorry, my dog's barking. And I was like, what? And it was just like amazing. Like, I don't even like the programming, everything. We felt so welcomed. And I got assigned 2 different mentors. There was a whole day where we got to meet all the partners. And And yeah, it was incredible. And I got to meet all these founders I was going to spend like the rest of the 8 weeks virtually with. And then the very last week was in San Francisco for the investor week.
Oh my gosh, Karen. So yeah. A total, how many weeks total?
It was like, it's an 8 week program, but because of Thanksgiving, it was like more like 10 weeks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I am so happy for you. How many were in the cohort with you?
25 companies.
Oh my gosh. So that's good. That's a nice small size. It may seem very big to everybody, but it really isn't. That's a doable size. You get a good opportunity to get to know each other and bond over those 10 weeks. And really that peer to peer with other founders must have been so helpful.
And it still is. The Slack group is still as active as ever. And we help each other out. Like, and there's just the deep sense that like, if one of us wins, we all win.
Oh,
like, it just feels like such a team sport. And that's why I'm like so grateful for that accelerator, just like the community that they curated and put together for us.
Oh, this is wonderful news, folks. Accelerators are really worth the angst to apply. And as Karen said, she really wasn't thinking it was going to happen, especially with the woman from AWS giving them the hard questions without any emotion behind them. And all of a sudden, okay, see you in 2 weeks in Seattle. Must have been like, we won the mega bucks.
I was like in shock because it was just so not where that I thought that conversation was going.
I love it. And what's the biggest lift that this accelerator program has given you?
The ability to bring on a software engineer to build out our AI. So we're actually about to retire in the good old beta that I mostly cobbled together myself. And we, in the next month, like in less than a month, we'll be launching the alpha, and that's gonna have all the AI recognition. So when you upload, you really will upload all the pictures of things you wanna sell, and it'll automatically identify what product it is. So you don't have to do any of that like manual data entry. Oh, yeah. So that's exciting. There's gonna be receipt scanning, batch code, upload, so that we know, you know, if that foundation, like liquid foundation is like 8 years old, like, no, you can't sell that.
But you know what I love about this? And, you know, whether you like or hate Gary V, he's usually spot on how to make money. And he's a huge fan of yard sales and getting things there and reselling them. So this is a lot along his ideas for doing that. And there are people who just love this way, again, of making some extra money. As you said, the woman, geez, I got to get my kid and, you know, some new skates and pay for his hockey team, you know, practice. What can I move in the house other than the kids, right? The furniture. I've got some product right here I can move. And for the conscious consumer, instead of going to Macy's or Sephora or wherever, they can go to Glow Beauty, GLOU.CO, everyone, and get what they need in a way. So how does shipping come into play on your platform?
So we let the sellers kind of set their flat rate shipping fee. So if you buy one item, two items, or 10 items, or 100 items, it's just you pay the shipping that one time.
Excellent. You met with investors with AWS, you know, in San Francisco. You just mentioned that. And I'm sure, you know, having been part of the Scroobius platform as well, you really got a sweetheart of a pitch deck pulled together, but you still have to go through the process of finding aligned investors for your funnel. I mean, funnels are just never ending for a founder, every aspect. What have you learned? What have been some of the hard lessons, some of the insights, some of the biases? What can you share about the fundraising process that you're walking away with as a female founder?
Things would be so much easier and I'd be so much further along if I was a man.
Yeah.
And that is probably like someone who grew up in such a feminist household, went to an all-girls school, and I was on all-girls robotics team as well. So it was really all about like, girls can do anything. You can do anything you want to. And then walking into this startup world and venture world where it's like the sexism is not a joke and it's not subtle. It is just out there And there's a saying that, you know, if you're male, pale, and from Yale, you don't get those checks. And it's unfortunately true. And it's like really, it's maddening. It makes me really angry. And I think that's kind of become my online persona. I'm actually like a very like go with the flow kind of person, but like online, I'm just mad at this like whole ecosystem for just not funding.
They're not. And
people who are not like the stereotypical.
They don't look at you, the female founder, and think they're going to be building wealth. And yeah. Folks, I was, as you know, a couple of weekends ago, I was hanging out at Harvard Business School's venture capital and private equity event, where I got a deeper understanding of what it means to build wealth without impact. And anybody you want to, from HBS, you want to call me about this, fine. And I'll bring a slew of founders like our wonderful Karen Lee here. The point is that you're not a guarantee of building wealth for them, even though the numbers are there. They need to go with the typical Andreessen Horowitz business model, so to speak, right? The kind of Yale, pale, and male, whatever you want to call it, someone who's bringing that level of what they're used to in pattern matching to the equation.
Yeah.
So of course you're frustrated. You still have to get out there and fundraise and do whatever you can to find, you know, even a wealthy individual who is not part of a fund. You know, this is why it's so important sometimes just to stay away from the VCs. They have to meet their fund requirements. Finding someone who's passionate about what you're doing and can write a check.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that's what it's going to take, and who understands the bias out there. And, you know, I encourage anybody who is an accredited investor, take a look at some of these companies. We're trying to democratize the fundraising process, okay, through platforms, just, you know, the conversations I have with founders here, but there's Radovision, there's all, you know, Scroobius. You can hop on Scroobius and take a look at some of the deals with the diverse founders. Your check, 25K, 50, 100K, you know wealthy individuals, that when you have the money, that this can be a great investment for you and a great way to add wind to sales, like someone like Karen Lee. What are your thoughts about that, Karen?
So I was talking to a wonderful woman investor, Jillian Musig, from Masters Fund in Seattle. And she had a great reframe. And I was like, why is it that, like, even though 8% of VCs are women, it's still only like less than 2% of VC funding goes to women founders. And of course, like, these people are operating in the same patriarchal system that is full of misogyny.
Right. But, and they're often not the check writers.
Exactly. So we have to think about, like, okay, who are like the wealthy women who are like basically rich old ladies? Where are you at and why aren't you funding like this new generation? And it's because, like, through history, women have been taught to write philanthropic checks.
Right.
And that's what they should be doing. Whereas men are kind of like, no, like, I'm going to invest in someone who, like, you know, reminds me of me and my youth and like give them this opportunity. But really, if you kind of like reframe investing in women, it's kind of like, okay, if you're going to write that 50K check, you just have to assume like that's 50 check, that 50K is already going to be gone. You can't really like think of it with the same risk mindset that a lot of women have towards like finance and investment. It's like, okay, cool. You're putting $50,000 into something you want to see exist. That is the future you want to see through. And whether or not that startup survives, that startup will have made connections and, like, you know, hack their way through a part of the forest to make it easier for another woman behind her to, you know, follow along. And it's really about, like, less about like, I need to make investment, I need to make a smart investment. It's kind of like, cool, like, let me put this money in towards the future I want. And like, that could be into an individual founder who's building something that's like really cool. And that's kind of like a reframe that like made me go like, oh, wow.
Oh yeah. And I'll give you an example of, you know, with my food manufacturing business, my angel, primary six-figure angel investor in the business, was an incredible almost 5-year run. And I had Mother Nature came through in many, many ways, lightning, burn things down, agriculturally, et cetera. And I was forced out of business through Mother Nature, which can happen, folks. And what was his response? Knowing this was going to be the outcome going in, I still would have done this because it was a great ride. It was a great possibility and it could have happened. Yeah. And that's different than having, shackles on your money going out. Mm-hmm. And you're right. And I understand, Karen, women have only had the vote for just over 100 years. We've only been able to have a credit card since 76 and sign our own mortgages, okay, for just a few short decades. I understand that we're still caught up in this paradigm of money. We have to save it to protect our kids. And let me have another bake sale. I'm going to have Julia Pimsleur on the show on April 7th. You might want to tune into that. She wrote The Million Dollar Woman. And she talks a lot about this reframe as well. So I'm so happy you mentioned this and you brought this up for our viewers and listeners to chew on, because it's not easy, but just like what you've created with Glow Beauty to change how and we consume beauty products, we can change the landscape for women by reframing and helping educate and shift the paradigm of how it's done. In the meantime, and we can't give up because look, civil rights, thank God they didn't give up and we still have to keep fighting for that. And same with the suffragette movement. They didn't give up, thank God, after 100 years. We cannot give up. We still have to keep going. Let's talk a little bit about, I talked about mentorship in the beginning here, and how important it is. Who's added wind to your sails? Because folks, anytime you hear someone says, I'm a self-made woman or man, they're giving you a line of BS. Nobody succeeds alone. Who's helped you and added wind to your sails and opened doors for you that you want to do a quick shout out for?
My mom and my parents in general for letting me move back home and like live here for free and feeding me. It is the utmost privilege to be a founder because I have this safety net of knowing that I don't need to like make rent or like put food on the table. I can really like focus all in on what I need to do. And they are like, if you need to do what it takes to get this business going and like, we'll support you in that. And like, literally would not be able to do this without their support. So
thank you, mom and dad. And as a mom of, young men who are your age, we've been able to help out like that. I take in that love. I love that. Thank you. And speaking of success, one of my favorite questions is to ask, what does success look like for you? Is it a feeling? Is it an outcome? And whose measuring tape are you using for success? Is it yours or someone else's?
It's really funny because like, I feel like I am so creatively fulfilled by being able to pursue this and like do it to the fullest extent that I'm able. So that's really great. But like all the other stability stuff that comes usually like in your 20s when you get a job and like get your first couple promotions, like don't have any of that. So I mean, for me, success would be having like some kind of stability in my life because foundership is like so full of uncertainty. And that would just like, it's just, it success for me comes down to like the really little things. And like, I'm not kidding when I say it. I just want to be able to eat, sleep, and poop without thinking about it.
Right.
Like,
where is that going to be?
And that would be great if I could just like do all of that without actually thinking about that every day and like why it's not working.
Folks, I just have to clap crazily for this founder journey moment. The extra woohoo there. It's so true. I love that point that you just made there, Karen. Oh my gosh. And how has entrepreneurship served you now that you've been at this for a while? How are you seeing the changes in yourself and both personally as well as professionally? What are the profound moments that you're going, dang, I'm getting really good?
Again, like, when you work for yourself, you don't have a boss to blame. You're literally facing yourself every single day. And I think there's so much more like personal growth that has to happen at a very accelerated scale, especially if you're an underestimated founder. Like if things go wrong, you have no one else to blame, but at the same time, you have to like have all that self-love to keep going. And that's so much easier said than done. I've almost quit twice, like literally like bawling my eyes out, like I can't keep going. And I don't know, one of those things that happened was a pandemic, and I was like, oh, well, guess I'm not going to go out to get a job now. I really was going to put this on back burner. And then again, like maybe a year and a half ago, I was like, I'm exhausted.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I can't do this. Like, and it's the hardest part, especially doing this, like, as your first big career job.
Right. It's
like, I am constantly like seeing my peers who a lot of them from the robotics world are engineers, and a lot of everyone else in business school are like in consulting or banking or whatever. Seeing them like establish themselves in a more traditional like one by one milestone, like, okay, they got a job, they got promoted, they got engaged, they got married, they got a house. And I'm like,
they went on vacation.
Yeah. And I'm like, I feel like I'm in a state of arrested development in some ways, but at the same time, it's like all that wisdom piece that comes in your midlife. I was like, I got that. I'm so creatively fulfilled that like, if this works out, like I'm good.
Right.
But,
oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. Especially the arrested development part. But you know, those are all just things. At the end of the day, you know, you would not be happy enough. And I'm going to tell you from, you know, as a four times founder, I had to take every one of my businesses right to like, to the point, yeah, as much as I could give, because I could never settle for only taking it halfway and going, now I better go back to work. Not that I was employable. But
what if someone did it and they do it? Like, I would not be able to live with that.
Exactly. Or just being able to bring your excellence and having your high level of how it needs to look and be, and not be happy until you'd given it everything you had. So I am so proud of you and so happy you shared your startup founder journey with us today in the Startup Life Live Show. Karen Lee from Glow Beauty, what final words would you like to share with the Startup Life Live community before I pop you into the green room and wrap up the show?
Well, go check out glow.co, go to shop.glow.co, and you know, shop all the amazing deals we have, new listings every single day. My dog's like, oh, it's time to go. And also sign up for our newsletter so that we can stay in touch. We are going to be launching our new platform very shortly. And I think it's going to be a huge game changer. And it'd be really cool if you were there like before everyone else knew about.
Absolutely. You don't want to miss out, everyone. And I'll have all of Glow's contact information in the show notes. Please follow Karen and Glow Beauty everywhere they glow and add wind to their sails just with your likes and retweets or however you want to do that in social media. And hop on and check out how to move product in this incredible platform. Thank you, Karen, for joining us on the show. Can't wait to see you in Boston.
Thank you so much for having me. See you soon.
I loved every minute of it. Oh my gosh. I know some of you are laughing out loud, and I know Ruth was like, oh my gosh, I love, you know, the energy and everything going on. And Richard O, exactly. Eat, sleep, and poop without thinking about it. Stitch that on a pillow. A founder's dream. How wonderful. Okay, folks. Well, let me share with you who's coming. I mean, I've got the Startup Life Live Show. And you know how I'm always quoting investor questions and questions for investors? That's this guy. Alex is called. So it's Friday, February 17th at 12 p.m. ET. We're chatting with four times tech founder and founder managing partner of 2048 Ventures, a VC firm backing visionary founders who are creating technologies of the future with a specific focus on biotech, deep tech, platform, and API companies. And Alex is going to help you better discern the best and most aligned investors for your startup, because it's all about questions founders need to ask investors during the first meeting. And I have been following Alex for years. I follow his Startup Hack blog. He's absolutely extraordinary, and almost 50% of the portfolio at 2448 Ventures is diverse founders. So we're going to definitely be pulling more on that thread as well. Until next time, I hope you're having a nice Valentine's Day wherever you celebrate. And please know that I'm cheering wildly for you and wishing you a delicious day wherever you glow. Cheers until next time, folks. And mwah!